And here we go. Welcome in to another edition of Bucky and BK. Today is Thursday, June 11th, 2026. And the Buck and I are with y'all for the next 2 hours on today's show. The biggest comeback in NBA Finals history. The biggest collapse in NBA Finals history. What happened to the Spurs? We will break down everything that went wrong for San Antonio in game four of the NBA Finals. Is this series over? We will debate. Plus, plenty of Texas Longhorns conversation. Evan Veith of Inside Texas will join the show. We'll also chop it up with Georgia insider Anthony Dasher to preview the Longhorns and the Bulldogs in the College World Series on Saturday. Talk a little Georgia football as well. Speaking of college football, the latest from the Brendan Sorsby situation, we've got some more kickoff times for the Texas Longhorns, and of course, we'll get to the BBK news and why today is not so bad on a Buck Off Thursday edition of the show. Buck on to all of you for tuning in. We appreciate y'all spending some of your Thursdays with us, and a buck on to you, my man. How are you today?
I'm doing good, hanging in there. A little bit of a warm morning again and warm afternoon, and yesterday was quite warm, and it's going to be warm again. But, hey, cold front coming in. You know, cold front, I see some 83s and 86s out there. My goodness.
Feels like what?
Feels like 103.
I was going to say, we've had some, like, upper 80s temps recently, but the feels like have been around triple digits.
Yeah, I know people that work outside that must be – you know, that are used to this, but I don't know how you ever get used to it. It is, it's almost like, I don't mind the sun bearing down on you, but the humidity bearing down on you, you know, it's like the silent killer where you can't see anything. You really don't really, but you do feel it. You feel it rising up out of this earth into your shorts. You know what I mean? Up underneath your nose into you, you know, and you can try, we wear caps, we play sports, we go outside and we wear these hats right here that we love. They don't do crap, BK. I know they protect you a little bit, but the radiation of the sun goes right through the leather, the cloth. It's like you feel it in your head. It feels like your head is on fire. But, hey, such is life. It doesn't stop us, and it doesn't stop an old fool like myself from getting out there like an idiot.
No, yeah, you've got to play your weekly round of golf. That doesn't stop just because the weather gets hot.
And I made a promise to my wife 2 years ago that, okay, I'm at the point where if it's 95 or above, I should not play. But if the feels like weather doesn't count as 95 to me, but I got to figure out this humidity stuff. Yesterday I was out there and, you know, I, and for those that like golf and go out and do some work, whether it's yard work or whatever, you really have to eat food. Food is very important. That energy that, you know, you got to feed that engine. When people are telling you about hydrating yourself, I think you overhydrate sometime by thinking, hey, the more water I drink, the better off I'm going to be. But if you go out there and you've had a muffin, some coffee and some water and some pecans and call it a breakfast meal before you go play for 4 hours, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. I mean, I've gotten away with it, but I was 20 years younger. It doesn't work now. Yeah. A banana doesn't work. A muffin doesn't work. Some orange juice and some water, that's not enough.
No, that's not going to get you through a 4.5 hour round of golf in June in Central Texas. I think you know better. You've been alive long enough to know that, sir.
Yeah, yeah. And I almost paid a heavy price yesterday. One of the Texas cheaters said, hey, do you need to get out of here? And I'm talking about hole number seven. I'm not talking about the backside. I'm talking about in the beginning at Onion Creek. The humidity down by that water was unbelievable. But no, I just, you know, when mama's not at home and I don't use the stove, that means stop off and get a taco or prepare yourself the night before and have stuff ready to go, because it's not enough. You know, I'm a skinny little dude as it is, and that means you got to put all kinds of stuff. I don't care if you have to put hot dogs in your belly. You can't go out there. Pecans, BK, I had a baggie full of pecans. And I had two handfuls, and before I went out, I thought that was going to do it. Not so much.
Well, I'm glad you lived to tell the tale.
Yeah, I'm I'm in today, folks. I'm in. I'm not, there's no yard work. There's no nothing. There's water, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And there's nothing else. This is like, you need to have your ass whooped for doing that. That's called that. I don't even tell my wife what happened. I don't even tell her how I felt. She just said, "Do you have a good round of golf?" I said, "No, but I was okay." And I don't even want to go back to telling her what I didn't do. Or your parents, I mean, and you kids too. Even you young kids out there want to run around all day long and think skip breakfast. Don't do it. That's a tip for everybody.
Yeah, everybody else knows that. I think you're the only person in the world who doesn't realize that.
Are you serious? What did you do? Did you have breakfast? Did you eat something yesterday before you went and started hitting balls?
Yeah, of course. Had a nice bagel and cream cheese. The girl was in New York last week. She brought me back some bagels, had a banana, had a chewy bar, drank a bunch of water. I've gone through this long enough. I know what you need to get through a June day, unlike you.
Hey, the sun wasn't even bright.
You're just out here eating
these nuts.
That ain't good enough, sir. Come on.
No, that's not. I wonder what I need to pack the night before. A sandwich? I don't like eating a sandwich in the morning. Who the hell wants to eat a damn sandwich?
How about some eggs?
I know. Hey, if I'm not allowed to use the stove, get it on the grill, right? Take the pan out on the grill.
Go somewhere to get food. You act like your home is the only place that has eggs.
No, there's a number of places. Hell, that you can get a breakfast taco egg or whatever you want. Hey, even Mickey D's.
Everywhere.
Whataburger. Come on, idiot. Good day to the soldiers at Fort Hood, Texas, the soldiers in the state of Texas, and all those that fight for us each and every day. I'm sure you're having plenty of food in you before you go out there and do battle. We appreciate what you do for all of us. And please do be safe out there, everyone.
Well, the biggest buck off in the history of buck offs.
Yes.
Goes to the San Antonio Spurs today.
Are you going
to
call that a choke? Aren't they just young and inexperienced?
I don't care if it's a bunch of 12-year-olds out there. There's no excuse for what happened at Madison Square Garden last night. The San Antonio Spurs, led by as many as 29 points in Game 4 against the New York Knicks. They led by 20 in the fourth quarter. And they dropped Game 4, 107-106, the final. OG Anunoby, the hero, the game-winning tip-in with 1.2 seconds left to lift the Knicks to victory and break Spurs fans' hearts all over the world. Yes, the greatest comeback in NBA Finals history, but also the greatest choke job in NBA Finals history. And what looked like, for most of the night, Buck, we were going to have ourselves a 2-2 series, and the Spurs had reclaimed home court advantage, and all of a sudden, they've got all the momentum, and two of these final three games are back in San Antonio, and now they're the favorites to get it done. That was what everything was looking like last night, and then now the Spurs are on the brink. They've got to win three in a row, or else the New York Knicks are NBA champs.
Well, I think they'll win one in a row, but that's going to be a nightmare for them to go back to Madison Square Garden no matter what. That just will be horrifying for them. If they can win at home and then they got to turn around and go back, that's ugly. That's going to be ugly for them. It just is. The way that happened last night, once they were up by 20 points with 9 minutes to go in the game, and they proceeded to shoot 8 3-point shots in a row. I mean, how about taking some time off the clock? How about starting to cover? You had Brunson down in the first half, I thought, for him. And then all of a sudden, this guy gets cut loose by everybody. I mean, he's shooting over the top of Wemby. He's shooting over everybody. He's going, you know, I always say he wants to go to his left. BK, he was going to his right hand. He was doing everything that he wants to do.
He was awesome. And so OG was OG
on Fox at the end. There's where that inexperience comes in. You don't even have to make that layup.
Well, De'Aaron Fox is not the young guy here. I mean, I know this is his first real playoff run because he spent his first few years in Sacramento and they never win anything. But, like, he's the most experienced guy on this team. He's the guy who's supposed to know what to do and what not to do in that situation. And the Spurs got a big stop. They're up by one. All De'Aaron Fox has to do is, you know, dribble the ball back out. He gets fouled. And I know the Spurs can't put the game away at the line because if they make two free throws, it's still a one possession game. But obviously the Knicks need a three, and at worst, you're going to overtime. But instead, De'Aaron Fox has a total brain fart, and I've been ripping him all playoffs long, and now people finally realize that that guy's no good. He tries to go in for the layup. He gets swatted by OG Anunoby, and then obviously on the other end, Ananobi's the hero as well with the crazy tip in because the Spurs don't box out.
Oh, no, they don't even look. There's nobody even looking for him.
No, and I'll give you credit. I mean, you've been on this from the very beginning of the Spurs playoff run. Heck, we were talking about this some in the regular season.
Yes.
The Spurs' inability to maintain big leads. It hurt them in games 1 and 2 in this series. It's hurt them at times in previous series. And obviously last night, I mean, the most egregious blown lead in the history of the sport. This team cannot find a way to hold on to leads. And look, again, Portland, Minnesota, that's fine. Those teams aren't good enough. The Spurs have too much talent. They could still find a way to win the series. You're playing a team as good as the New York Knicks in the NBA Finals. You can't get away with that kind of stuff, and that continues to plague this Spurs team, who has had a double-digit lead in all four of these games now, Buck, and they are down 3-1.
You know, I find it hard to understand why Wimby in the fourth quarter, I know he played the entire fourth quarter, but, you know, in the first three quarters, BK, he down near the basket again. He was around the basket. In the fourth quarter, he was so far out, there is no other line of defense. There are no other rebounders. Yeah, they're physical young guys, but there's no real presence down below. And in the last shot, he's out there trying to swat that shot. I know he likes blocking shots. I'm thinking, don't you need to – if Brunson makes it, he makes it. But don't you need to have somebody back there to rebound, somebody to make sure guys like OG is not there to tip it in? He played way out again in the fourth quarter. They were pulling him away from the basket.
You know why that happened? Wimby was tired.
Ah, he didn't want to go down there, Lloyd. He didn't want to go down there and battle, huh?
His fourth quarter was awful. And he admitted it after the game that he was worn down. But he didn't need to say anything. He could have denied it if he wanted to in the post-game press conference. He was gassed. He was tired. I mean, to your point about him not playing down low, he didn't take a single shot in the paint in the fourth quarter. I mean, he's a very good free throw shooter. He missed both of his free throw attempts in the fourth quarter.
That killed it, too.
That happens when you have tired legs. I don't know another superstar in the NBA who just runs out of gas as easily as Victor Wembanyama does. And that's his biggest goal. Look, hey, the Spurs could come back and win this series, and obviously every conversation changes. But if the Spurs lose, whether it's on Saturday in Game 5 or Game 6 back at the Garden, whatever, Wemby's got to get in better shape. And I think this is a whole organizational change that the Spurs have to make, because in the regular season, in an effort to keep Wimby healthy and make sure he lasts, they only played him like 25 to 30 minutes a game in the regular year.
29
and
minutes.
And in the playoffs, these games matter a lot more, obviously. They're asking him to play more minutes. He played 44 last night, and he just ran out of gas. He ran at Jalen Brunson, the superstar on the other team, smallest guy on the floor.
Yeah.
You don't see him running out of gas. He gets better as these games go on.
Yeah.
And Wembanyama, fourth quarter, the defining moment of his career up to this point, played the worst quarter of basketball in his life. He was out of energy, Buck.
Yeah, I mean, whose fault is it that they shoot 8 straight three-point shots when they're up? I mean, is that the coach needing to call timeout, or is it the players? I don't care how young they are, need to understand where they are in the game. There's only 9 minutes left in the game. Why are you firing up three? You're up 20 points, 20 points, not 12 points. Every time that thing went down, you know, 20, 15, as soon as it got to 12, it was like, uh-oh, there's a problem here.
You and I were talking before the show. I mean, it takes a village, right? Like, for a comeback slash collapse like that, one team has to do everything right and the other team has to do everything wrong. And obviously we know which one the Spurs were. So, yeah, part of it's on Mitch Johnson. I mean, the Knicks went on a 20-4 run in the fourth quarter, and he didn't take a timeout until the run got to 20-4. It's like he pulled a Kenny Atkinson. Remember the Cavs coach when they blew that 22-point fourth quarter lead against the Knicks in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals? We all ripped him the next day. It's like, you trying to take your timeouts with you? They don't roll over like a 401k, dude. No. Take your timeouts. So, yeah, Mitch didn't stop anything. obviously the Spurs players, they're the ones out there taking those shots, making those plays. So they deserve some blame and heat and criticism too. I mean, it takes a village. Like, everybody had their moment of screw up last night for San Antonio. I'm going to hold Wemby the most accountable. I mean, dude, that guy in the first half, how much crap was he talking?
Pointing to his head, telling guys how he's in their head.
I'm in your head. He goes up to Mitchell Robinson. I'm in your head. He's smiling. He's laughing. He's cracking jokes out there. He's doing all that. And then he plays like that in the second half? Are you kidding me?
That fourth quarter to me was just, I'm like, dude, get down there in the paint. Get away from that three-point line, offense and defense. And they need you down there to rebound. But you're out there because you want to block shots.
Dude, Wemby, here's the reality for Victor Wembanyama if the Spurs lose this series. Nobody's going to care about anything that guy does in a regular season again.
No.
Welcome to the finals. I've said this for my entire career, Buck, and I'm not the first person to invent this take. When you're a superstar in any sport, your legacy is defined by championships. Okay? This was Victor Wembanyama's first championship moment. Look, he's 22. I think he's going to get back, and I think he's going to win multiple championships, and maybe next week he wins a championship. This thing's not over yet. No. But nobody, because of the way they played four games, Buck. He's had 1.5 good games. He was amazing in game three. He was amazing in the first half last night. In 2.5 of these four games, he has not been good. And people are going to remember that until he's able to get over the hump in the championship. And again,
yeah, I mean, they brought Robinson in the game, and I thought, oh, he's about to manhandle this dude. Then they brought some other guy who barely plays in the regular season in, and I'm like, tear that guy up. Get that ball down in the paint and tear those guys up. Make 29-point lead a 40-point lead.
Right.
Score 76 points in the first half and come out and score 30 in the second.
They brought in some guy named Ariel. The Little Mermaid played last night.
I know.
And the Spurs still lost. Like, there's so many differences between, like, this Spurs and the big three Pop-led Spurs. That group, they didn't talk trash. They let their play do the talking. They won. This group, and it starts with, like, Wemby, Castle, and even Harper. Those guys are, there's a difference between swagger and outright arrogance. And these dudes, I mean, I watch every press guy. These guys are arrogant the way they're talking. And they haven't won a damn thing yet. And they are, the way they're talking, the way they're acting, cracking jokes, talking trash during they have not won anything yet. And they're out here talking so much smack and acting like they're, you know what, doesn't stink. And they go out there and do that. I'm not even a Spurs. I can't imagine how a Spurs fan feels. I don't even care. This just made me so mad as a sports fan to watch that, the way the Spurs have handled themselves in these press conferences and the way they've gone out and played in these games. It's,
yeah, they're nonchalant way. They're pretty nonchalant about, you know, if we just have to play our game. That's why I said the other day, oh, yeah, play your game. Your game is not enough to win. And if that was your game last night, look out. I mean, when you got a 29-point lead, you lost your game.
Right. And you had Castle before game four saying, yeah, no, we're going to win three in a row. And you've got Wembanyama. He always takes the mic off the stand, and he's always, like, leaning back, and he's talking about how confident he is. And, yeah, we've got this series, and everything's fine. Like, the arrogance is not sitting well with me. You can be confident. You better go back it up. Because if you don't, it looks dumb. It sounds dumb. And everyone's going to hold you accountable, like I obviously am right now.
Yeah, as I said, I think they win the next game. I just don't know how they go back to Madison Square Garden. I know New York will have their fans. I know the Knicks got to be so excited. If they can stay close in the first quarter without being down by double digits, they'll feel good about themselves, the Knicks, because, hell, they know they can come back on them. Hell, they know they can come back in the 20s. They can come back on this group. But I just don't – I don't know if the Spurs – I know they won game seven in, Oklahoma. I don't think they can go back to Madison Square Garden and win a game like that to come back. I don't think they can.
Well, you're more confident in game five than I am, because let's not forget the one game the Spurs did win in this series was at Madison Square Garden.
Yes.
Like, they're 0-2 at home, And there were a lot of Knicks fans in those first couple of games. Now that they have a chance to close things out.
Oh, they'll be down here in droves.
That's going to be a road game for San Antonio on Saturday. Like, it's going to be embarrassing. And it's not a shot at the Spurs fans. It's just, I mean, the resale market is what it is. And New Yorkers are paying and they're excited, whatever. But that's, you're going to hear defense chants when the Spurs are on offense on Saturday. Just brace yourself for that. So I don't know if they get up off the mat and even send this thing back to MSG. Like, that's,
I mean, that proved to me even more so. I always believed, you know, never give up. You just don't give up. And the Knicks proved that last night because, dude, they could have given up. I mean, they could have given in. I mean, after the first quarter, it was like, you guys about to get run out of your place. Back-to-back games you're about to lose at home and just get run out. And the place was electric. And in that fourth quarter, I'm like, as I said, when that thing got down to 12 points, I'm like, the Knicks are going to be in this game. They got a real chance here. Spurs are shooting threes. And guys, they don't even use any clock, BK. They come up, and the first guy past the three-point line doesn't even look at the clock. He just fires it. I'm like, are you got to be kidding me? You're winning the game. You're not losing the game. You don't have to come back. You're winning by 20.
The Spurs scored 76 points in the first half last night. They scored 30 in the second half. Wow. I mean – it was one of the most dominant first halves in finals history. That should have been the story today. They made 14 three-pointers, an NBA finals record in either half. Like, three Spurs had 15 or more points at halftime. They could not miss. They scored 41 in the first quarter, 76 in the first half. The route was on. This thing was done. And then
they don't know how to do it. They don't know how to – I asked that question numerous times in the playoffs. What is it about them that they just don't – I guess it's youth. I mean, the coaches got to help them. I mean, they got to be able to help them. So they're not that dumb. They played basketball since CY. I mean, they played basketball all their lives. You just don't give a team a chance like that. You're not up 20-some points. I don't care if you're up 15 points. You don't give a chance a team. I know it's the NBA, and I know it's about the fourth quarter, but you got to be smarter than that. You got to be the guy who gets a loose ball, and you got 13 seconds. You don't need to go to the rim. Hey, you're winning the game. You don't need to make a play. The play is to go that way and turn back around and let them grab you.
Yep. Like, you better be 1,000% sure that you're going to make that layup if you take that shot.
There can't be anybody around you. That dude was coming.
Everybody else has to be on the other side of the court. You got to be the only player past half court to take that layup there. And, God, OG Anunoby. What a second half for that dude. I mean, I think he had 19 points, 5 of 5 from three-point land, 7 of 9 shooting, the chase down LeBron block, and then the go-ahead tip in with 1 second left. What a performance. You know what the Knicks have that the Spurs don't right now?
What's that?
Bowls.
Yeah, that's true.
You got to have brains. You got to have heart. You got to have cojones.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Spurs have two of them. They didn't have the third one last night. Brutal. That's the worst loss in Spurs history, by the way. Like, to me, and I talked to some Spurs fans last night, the ones who were willing to talk, like, that surpasses the Ray Allen shot in Game 6 in 2013. That surpasses Derek Fisher .4. Like, Spurs have had some amazing moments. They've won five titles since 99. But they've also had some heartbreak, of course. When you're in the playoffs as often as they are, you've had some horrible, horrible moments, nightmares. Nothing was as bad as what happened last night. I don't think that's recency bias either, Buck. That's the worst loss they've ever had.
Yeah, that's, like I said, it's going to MSG to go back there again. That'll be a nightmare just to go into the locker room.
You got to get back there first.
I know. I think they get back. They squeak out one at home. The dancing nuns will help them out or whatever.
You kidding me? The dancing nuns are selling their tickets.
Oh, my God. They're selling the New Yorkers.
Telling them to New Yorkers. Yeah, Ben Stiller just hooked up with a nun to get the tick. Well, not that kind of hookup. Got to be careful with that. Nuns don't do that, right? They're not in on that.
They're not. They don't do it.
By the way, maybe the funniest part, and we'll talk more about the Spurs and the NBA Finals in hour two. We've got some great guests coming up here in a few minutes. The funniest part from a Bucky and BK perspective. You lost 200,000.
Yes, units. I did.
You had the Knicks, but they were 2.5-point favorites, and they won by one.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to laugh at you, my friend. I'm so sorry.
And I was rooting for the Spurs so hard down the stretch. I said, because I could feel it just coming on, BK. I'm like, come on, guys. You got this one. You can't be this dumb. You can't make yourself look this stupid. But you did.
They did.
Who's this other dude? Not Castle, but Vassal and Rassel. Who's that? The kid's name begins with a V.
Oh, Vassell? Devin Vassell?
That dude's hitting threes. That guy's got his eyes closed. He's hitting threes, BK, with his eyes closed. He wasn't even looking at the basket. He's making shots. I'm like, how is this guy making them? He's not even looking at the hoop.
He's a good player. He had a very good game. Well, very good first. No one had a great game. Everyone had a great first half. But, you know, they play four quarters. They play two halves. So,
oh, my God.
Can't say anybody had a great game for the Spurs. But, yeah, Vassell was awesome.
They got freaking Karl Anthony Towns out of the game like the first 2 minutes of the game. He's throwing elbows and they're trying to get physical back with the Spurs, trying to get even with them for what happened the last time they played. It didn't work. They got into a bunch of foul trouble.
Yeah.
And the Spurs still couldn't beat them.
Still couldn't beat them. Yeah. And the Spurs, Castle picked up his fourth foul like early in the third quarter. And that was a big moment that kind of started the Knicks comeback. Cause that's when Brunson went off because Castle was on the bench. But still, I mean, you could point at certain things. There's no excuse to blow a lead like that. That's going to sting for a long time, for sure. All right, we'll take your thoughts. Again, we got more meat on the bone. We've got some sound from Mitch Johnson, some sound from Wemby. We'll talk about it more as the show goes along. We're about to talk to Evan Veith of Inside Texas, a little Longhorn baseball chatter, some Texas football too. But before we do that, Buck, how about our first round of sponsor shout-outs?
Say hello to our friends over at Sue Patrick's with the incredible selection of Longhorn apparel. And they've got it all, folks. They've got the hats. We got the caps. They got the shirts, the T-shirts, tons of Texas-themed gifts, items, books, cards, and a wide variety of men's and women's clothing. Don't forget Father's Day, or do remember. Not the word. That's negative connotation. How about do remember Father's Day? It is just a couple weeks away, kids. And Dad would love to have one of those great golfing polos. Sue Patrick offers free shipping on online orders, $59 or more, free curbside pickup, and plenty of parking space. Go by and grab one of those national championship softball T-shirts. And soon there'll be some I believe there's going to be some T-shirts out there for Omaha, too, available for you that Jay will have made and ready to go for you. For more information, folks, Sue Patrick's been around 50 years. Go to SuePatrick.com.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, they've got the Men's College World Series shirts ready to go.
Yeah.
They're up for sale in store or online. And they also have softball hats now in addition.
Now you're talking. There you go.
Championship shirts. So gear up at Sue Patrick. Some love to McCall Custom Homes as well. Custom home builders and remodelers here in Central Texas. It's a father-son team with tons of experience. More than four decades of experience. And all of that is right here in Central Texas. These guys didn't start in California or Florida or even Dallas or Houston. They started here. They have stayed here. So they know what it takes to turn an Austin area home into something truly special. Kitchen remodels, bathroom renovations. Maybe you've got a growing family you want to add on to your home. How would you want to buy or sell right now? The market's crazy and moving's a pain. Just add on to your place. You bought it for a reason. McCall Custom Homes, they can do all of those things for you. A-plus rated by the BBB. Tons of five-star reviews online. Mike McCall has become a great friend of ours. Big Longhorn fan. Big-time listener of the show. And he and his team will take care of you. McCallCustomHomesATX.com. About free estimates for listeners of this show. You can give Mike a call or a text on a cell phone. 512-633-9580. It's McCall Custom Homes. We build value into your home.
And thank you to the folks at Early Bird CBD because I feel great today. You know, with all the things that happened to me in the course of that humidity yesterday, not enough food. I did have, maybe I should have taken three or four of those early birds. Maybe that would have counted for a meal. You think I would have been seeing things out there then? Wow. But I tell you what, my knees feel good. Walked over 5 miles in that madness yesterday. I used the drops again. I put them in water I put them in a lot of water because I didn't hydrate myself enough, but just didn't have enough. Didn't have enough in the engine, but it worked. My body feels good. My legs feel great. And thank you. That stuff really works for me when it comes to making my knees and my ankles and my back feel pretty good. I appreciate them an awful lot.
Yeah. Love the Early Bird CBD products, a local Austin based company that makes products designed to make you feel good. And that's what Early Bird is all about. And yeah, these drops are a total game changer. You drop these
the Spurs
in water.
Need some of that. They need to drop some of that into their Gatorade bucket.
The Spurs, well, you know, they were playing in New York and marijuana is legal up there. They looked like they were smoking that medical grade last night. At halftime, they were just passing a bong around the locker room and they fell asleep in the second half. Early Bird, look, this stuff's great. It's not as strong as like the medical grade stuff. This is perfectly legal, number one, but you're also going to feel something. Again, you get the effects of CBD, but also a micro dose of THC as well. I take him to relax and unwind. The buck takes him to help alleviate pain. Whatever your reason, there's going to be a reason. Earlybirdcbd.com. Use the promo code Bucky, and you'll get 20% off your first order. All right, let's chop it up with one of our favorites. A lot going on the 40 acres. Of course, we are 2 days away from Texas baseball opening play in the College World Series. We've got some Longhorn football conversations going on, some kick times announced, and joining us now to talk all things Texas Longhorns is our great friend Evan Veith from Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, and the Inside Texas Football YouTube channel as well. Evan, thanks so much for the time, man. How are you today? Oh, I think we've got you muted, which is weird because your unmute thing. Oh, don't have you now. We see you talking.
Hello, hello, hello.
There you go.
There we go. Now he's back.
My microphone, let me tell you, will do that sometimes. It'll just mute me, and I have no idea why. So, sorry about that, boys, but back
on. That's all right. Wimby needs one of those where he doesn't grab the mic and just start talking nonsense. Nobody cares.
Mitch Johnson needed a microphone in the huddle to tell him to stop shooting threes. Let me tell you that.
No kidding.
Total disaster there. Well, Evan, let's start with Longhorn baseball. Texas and Georgia. I guess we can look back first, right? The Longhorns taking care of Oregon in the Austin Super Regional, sweeping the Ducks. What impressed you the most from that two-game series at UFCU Dish Falk Field? And maybe what do you think can translate and travel with the Longhorns to Omaha starting this weekend?
Yeah, I like that Texas got it done in two different ways. You know, well, first game was just kind of getting to a starting pitcher and you get to a suboptimal bullpen, which that's just college baseball for you. A lot of these teams just don't have these wicked good bullpen pitchers like Sam Cozart or the guy Tanner Bradley who came in the second game. So sometimes it's nice to just like, okay, you got Dylan Valantis on the mound, you got superstars at bat. Like, let's just go win this game pretty comfortably and move on to game two. And that's what happened, even without Robbins and Tinney having, you know, exceptional games outside of just walking a lot. So then you get to game two and you say, okay, we kind of have a similar blueprint, right? We get out to another two-run innings to start it. And, yeah, it was frustrating that they were blanked it from inning 3-7. And Tanner Bradley, that, like, gyro changeup he throws, it almost moves like a sinker but has even more movement to the gloves – or to the arm side, excuse me. Just an unreal pitch, and that really slowed down this Texas offense. But, you know, there are things that didn't go their way. You know, our game thread loved complaining about the shift when balls just – didn't go in the way of I think Temo Becerra got kind of killed on a few of those, where it's not his fault. It's just where he's supposed to be. But, you know, Oregon scored a few runs, ended up taking a lead, but Texas showed they could win a close game in the last two or three innings. I mean, the two teams basically had nine outs to decide who was going to win that game. And for Texas, if they were going to go to Omaha, Oregon, if they could force an extra game. And Texas was the better team in the last three innings of that game. And that just goes to show kind of the level of play Texas can play at in Omaha. I think some things that can translate for sure for me. I mean, the star power definitely will. You know, that's Robbins and Tinney, of course. But, you know, I'm ready to move Adrian Rodriguez into the discussion of the top three, now four, with the way he's been hitting. I mean, he was the best player in that Austin Super Regional. That double, unforgettable moment. And one of the loudest crowd pops I've had. Probably the, you know, I was in the press box. I've heard big crowd pops, you know, in the crowd. That's why the loudest I've ever heard that stadium. And that's with kind of the de-amplified noise from where I was sitting. So just an unreal moment. Got a pretty fun shot of that. But yeah, if Adrian Rodriguez is going to hit like that, then Texas really has kind of four stars in their lineup. And then, it's just about making sure Becerra is getting the most out of his at-bats when he has runners in scoring position and at the bottom of your order is churning through well. But either way, that combined with I really do like this Luke Harrison experiment where they're kind of using him as a if needed reliever. Like, hey, if we just need some outs here, that could be two outs where he's only throwing 15 pitches. It could be we're kind of scratching a start the next day or 2 days from now to have him go three or four innings if that's what we need from him. I like the way that Schlossnagel set that up so that you can have a game where Volantis throws most of it, Harrison throws a few, and then you got Thomas Burns and Sam Cozart to really close out in some leverage moments. You know, Thomas Burns had those two walks when Volantis came out in the first game. And, you know, I've criticized Schlossnagel's moves in the bullpen a lot this year, and especially in that super region. I still think even in the second game there were some odd moves. But you know what? Thomas Burns, two out of his three appearances in this postseason between the UC Santa Barbara game and that second Oregon game have just been absolutely nails. And that's what you'd hope from him for most of the regular season. You didn't get that for most of the regular season after a really good 2025. So now you're getting that version of Thomas Burns as kind of a closer, but in the setup role for Sam Cozart, who's just unhittable when he's on. Texas's pitching is looking much better than it did even just at the end of the regular season, but definitely, you know, from the first few games of the regional when there were just some, it was hard to tell who your bullpen arms are really going to be because a lot of guys have been resting a while. So I'm looking forward to see how the bullpen pitches and just if that kind of star power from the lineup really translates into Omaha.
You know, Evan, they're going to score runs. Georgia's good. They're going to score some runs. They hit well, they run well, you know, they pitch well. But Texas, I think that game with Oregon really, the series with Oregon really has set them up to be in really a tough ball game where they're down two or three runs. They can come back. It just feels like a team that's reaching the point of we're going to be in it no matter what. And no team is going to get far away from us, but they can score. Georgia can score on them.
You know, Bucky, Georgia was never going to go 0-2 in Omaha. They were always going to find a way to play Texas in that side of the bracket. As long as Texas can throw Dylan Volantis against Georgia, I think they have a chance. And more than just a chance, obviously, when Dylan Volantis is on the mound. But, you know, Georgia, I think, is the clear favorite here. They have just an unreal offense, 1-9. And, yeah, the pitching is very suspect. And there's some people who are, you know, my co-host Nash Talks Texas is really big on the idea that you got to have pitching to win. For me to at least get to the regional final or the College World Series final, excuse me, you got to be able to hit. And you got to be able to out-hit your opponents. And that's what Georgia can do easily. But I'd rather Texas play them game one than any other game of the series because you know for sure you have a fully rested pitching staff, which is much more in Texas's favor than in Georgia's. You know, Justin Bird's been lights out as a reliever for them, but Volchko's been shaky. Caden Aoki is more of a relief, long relief guy than he is a starter, and he's kind of been thrown into that starting role to end the year here. So, you know, Volantis versus Volchko is very much in Volantis's favor, and then you've got Harrison and Cozart to close the game out. If that can limit Georgia to five or fewer runs, I feel like Texas can really take that game and let their offense explode. You know, it gets underrated when talking about Texas, but they have quite a few games this year where they just get to double-digit runs, and that's not always with the long ball. Sometimes it is just they have a few really crooked innings, and they're getting the runs scored on the board. But some teams really struggled to get Texas's offense to stop throughout the year, and if Georgia's like that, then we might be looking at 1-0 Texas and Omaha. And I think whoever wins that game is going to be the favorite, you know, by betting odds the rest of the way, just because they're probably going to be better than Oklahoma or Alabama, given you won that game. That's not to take away from either of those teams. Oklahoma in particular is red hot. But, you know, I just think that those two teams are a step above Oklahoma and Alabama. And then you're coming in with a winner's bracket. You can even drop a game to end it before you could get to the College World Series final. That would set up the Longhorns in such a good way that, you know, like, give me that Georgia matchup. Give me that Saturday night primetime game. I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, Evan Veith of Inside Texas and InsideTexas.com joining us here on Bucky and BK. Well, I think for most Longhorn fans, the biggest concern for Texas going to Omaha would be the bullpen. I know you talked about them a little bit earlier. You wrote a great piece earlier in the week on Inside Texas talking about it as well. Is that your biggest question mark with this team, or you feel good enough about it to where maybe there's something else on your mind?
Yeah, I think question mark is for sure the bullpen because we kind of don't know the hierarchy, and it's really late in the year, and I thought we had a really clear grasp of it heading into the postseason that's just kind of been flipped on its head. You know, maybe concern-wise, I do think that, you know, that Borba Pendergrass part of the bottom of the order has not been productive, but I think we know what that part is. But when Borba gets a hold of the ball, it's going to go a long way. When Pendergrass gets on base, he's going to be a threat. if those aren't happening, then that sucks, but that's just how it is. But the bullpen is the one where I have questions, because I know Cozart is going to be there. I know Burns has probably earned that role as that higher relief and leverage guy. Ethan Walker is going to be your one or two out against lefty player, and he's done really well at doing that. That's exactly the role he needs. They tried to experiment a little more than maybe what he's capable of in the end of last year and some this year. And I think we've just settled on that's where Ethan Walker's at his best, and that's completely fine. But after those guys, you know, I would have thought Brett Crossland would have been easy right in for that. But Brody Walls has gotten more of those opportunities than Crossland. And Walls is a good pitcher. And Schlossingle noted that he was a little more battle-tested when he'd come in that second game on Sunday against Oregon. But you know, Brett Crossland has not gotten a lot of opportunities. I don't like when he gets inherited runners. It's just not – he has a tendency to throw kind of two wild pitches to start his – you know, his appearances before really settling in. And then I'll get the big punch outs and the ground balls. But I would love to see Crossland get just like a clean sixth inning. It doesn't need to be against the best bats in a lineup, but getting him back in the fray, a lot of these teams don't have more than like two or three really good relievers, and really good is even pushing it. Just having Cozart, Harrison Burns alone, it looks good for Texas. It's just like, can these two lefties really be of high value? Like, can Hayden LaFeu throw strikes? And then which one of the freshmen between Cozart's already in there, but Crossland and Walls, and maybe even, you know, they've shown they want to get Michael Winner into games. I just don't know if they've done it enough leading up to do it in Omaha, at least not in leverage situations. Maybe he could get some long relief if in a blowout or in a game that they're losing heavily. So we'll just see. I think there's going to be some surprise moves here or there. You never know when a random hero emerges. Omaha breeds those kind of random players, and a lot of times it's hitters who just kind of get thrust into a lineup that could be Casey Borba, like we've talked about, but it also could be like Jim Schlossingle needs an out. Maybe Cody Howard comes in. You had no idea who'd come in. You might have hated the decision the second it comes out, but if he gets you three outs, that is all you can ask for and more.
Yeah. Real quick follow-up here on that. Hayden LaFeu, you mentioned him. Apparently he was not available for the Oregon Super Regional. At least that's what they were saying on the TV broadcast. Like, are we good there? Is he all systems go to pitch whenever in Omaha?
Yeah, he was going to be good to pitch the next day. I think the broadcast kind of conflated what was said. He was just like day-to-day more than anything, and it was a soreness thing. If they really, really needed to, like say that game went 12 or 13 innings and they needed an arm, I think LaFeu could have pitched. But this is not like an out for an extended amount of time. I think he was just not feeling right. I think they also, you know, when you throw through those against UC Santa Barbara, I believe, you know, eight pitches and two of them were strikes or something like that, or 10 total and two of them were strikes. Like he looked off. It didn't just look like he was struggling. He just didn't seem to have what he usually did. And, you know, I know a lot of people don't like Hayden LaFeu. He threw three scoreless against Tennessee in that Sunday game. And he was untouchable against a Tennessee offense that was really hard to get out. So when he's on, he's really on. And if that means that you had to maybe rest him in the Super Regional, if you can get, same with any of these guys in the bullpen outside of, you know, your Cozart and Burns and Harrison, any sort of value you get from these guys is such a plus in your run. So yeah, setting them up in the right spots is what matters the most. And if LaFeu can get you three outs, then, man, that's going to feel really good no matter what game you're playing in.
You know, Evan, we're getting close to the midway point in June. Football-wise, how is Sark and how is the staff doing with recruits bringing them in? Who are some of the key guys that are coming in on campus now?
Yeah, they went splash last weekend. That was kind of the story of it. Number one recruit, Jalen Brewster. Number two recruit, John Meredith. And those are guys, you know, I think Brewster's just going to be really complicated. This is a Texas Tech commit. It's gone the rounds that his family's bought property in Lubbock. You know, with the NIL these days, that's not that big of an ask to buy property in Lubbock. So I don't think that's a huge factor in it. But he's taking a lot of visits. He really wants to experience the process, wants to know what it's like to see these schools, see where the best fit is. And I, you know, Texas is going to put out a good NIL offer. They're going to show them Kenny Baker's successes and Will Muschamp and how the defense can work. They clearly see that this kid is talented. He wouldn't be the number one player in the country. But, you know, is it worth expending all that money when you're probably going to be paying Easton Royal and John Meredith, who's really trending well towards the Longhorns, who is that number two player, a cornerback from in-state? They feel really good about him as a player. I think they feel quite good about him coming to Texas. It's between the Longhorns and Texas A&M. I believe Texas gets the last visit, at least in the summer. So that's something to note. They're playing a lot of the retention game. What Texas has done well in this cycle is get some guys early who are going to end up kind of going up in the rankings. So that's, you know, safety slash cornerback Greedy James, who, you know, our Eric Nolene has said that he's got people in state who say he could be the second or third best cornerback, even though he's ranked as, you know, the number 25 safety in the class when you look at Rivals and 247 rankings. So that's one of those guys that they'll catch up on. But, you know, look at his offer sheet. Notre Dame and LSU are the two teams that are pursuing him. Like, that's not a three-star type of player. That's a mid to high four-star. So
sure.
Those guys, Bryson Thrower just committed, a big X receiver that can go across from Easton Royale. We've already got an RPM in for Kyron Brown, who's a three-star, kind of third in the class type of wide receiver. They're going to keep tabs on Monsoon Sales, but generally we know what the skill positions are going to look like in this group, and that's good to get it done early. What I'm really looking out for is, you know, what's going on the D-line? Who are they going to be able to add at linebacker as well? Like, what are the next steps? I really like Kasai Curry and Jabarius Garore. They're like big-time athletes from out of state, and that's what Will Muschamp's done well his whole recruiting career, and of course Kenny Baker does that extremely well. So edge has been really well filled out for that team already. D-line and linebacker, not so much interior D-line, that is. So they're going to go big fish hunting at those two positions. We'll see how many they take. I think they could use a lot of D-linemen, like a three- or four-person class. But, you know, you'd like it if Curry could maybe commit soon, because Cy Curry from the West Coast, and really start a really good foundation in that D-line room.
Sure.
Evan Veith of Inside Texas joining us here on Bucky and BK. So I'm sure on your boards you're seeing some panic. I feel like it happens every year, and yet some Longhorn fans still don't learn. But as of right now, I think Texas has the 26th ranked class in the country for the class of 2027. You're telling us it's going to go way up from there.
Yeah, people don't learn sometimes. It's just not important in March leading through June. Like, the importance of it is the relationships and laying the groundwork. But it should be pretty clear to a lot of people that, you know, Texas is going to get a lot of the gimmies that they want. Like, some players, they get the offer from Texas, they say, when can I sign? Not, you know, what do I want to see more? So Texas has done a decent job of just getting the three stars that lay the foundation and don't take into the NIL money all that much. And those are kind of your less premium positions, interior offensive line. Ty Knutson is the quarterback take, because Dia Bell was that big time, big money guy the last class. They're probably going to pay up in 2028, but that doesn't mean Knutson isn't good. In-state kind of kid, really wanted to play at Texas. That's the kind of guy you take there. So you build that foundation. That's why it's only the 26th class, because there's a decent bit of three stars. You also get a few of those big shots in Eastern Royale that you just want to take early, and then you fill out the rest. It's the same formula every year, at least for the past 2 to 3, with how NIL has worked. And, you know, last year they only ended up with the number 10 class, but think about some of the guys that are already, you know, making headlines. Derek Cooper is going to be in the running back rotation. Jermaine Bishop's going to be in the wide receiver rotation. Tyler Atkinson at linebacker. Richard Wesley's already showing good returns, right? Like, Samari Matthews at cornerback's already flashed. They're going to get the players that can show up on campus immediately with another group of players that are going to take a little bit to develop. And, you know, it's probably not going to be a $50 million class, which I know I've heard that number brought out about Texas A&M. I doubt a recruiting class would ever be that expensive, but it's not going to be that number one recruiting class. But with the way that they attack the portal, you don't need it to be. You don't want them to overpay for players that are eventually going to transfer. I think they kind of learned that in the 2025 class. So it's not going to be the 26th. It might not be the number four or better. But just trust that, like, these guys have been recruiting at a very high level, that staff, for quite some time. They will have the right level of player and the right level of resources to go get them coming into the team.
Yeah. And then last thing, Evan, before we let you go, I'll screen share this. Bucky and I are going to give our thoughts about this later, but I know you wrote a piece on Inside Texas about some of the kickoff times for the Texas Longhorns in 2026 that were announced yesterday. I guess before yesterday, we already knew about the three non-conference games. We already knew about the Lone Star Showdown against Texas A&M, but we got some windows and some actual kickoff times for the other SEC games in 2026. Anything, you don't need to go game by game, but anything really stand out for you with the way this thing shakes out for the Longhorns?
Yeah, I think three distinct things stand out to me. I think the 11 a.m. Tennessee game is somewhat of not a gift, but just like, you know, when the Volunteers are already kind of, they're not quite in the spot that they thought that their program would be maybe 2 or 3 years ago, when, you know, Nico was coming in, they made the playoff, and they just seemed like they were on an uptick in terms of the way they were producing talent. And now they're playing Texas versus Tennessee, and they don't even get the night game. This is an 11 a.m. kick. It's going to be in week four, so they're going to have a very inexperienced quarterback only in his fourth game of college football. Texas doesn't have to deal with the crazies in Knoxville at night. Get an 11 a.m. kick. It's not going to be super hot in Knoxville, but at least, like, you know, that's early and in the sun. That's good for the Longhorns. I think that's really nice. Excuse me. I already thought they were going to be the favorite team in that matchup away. This really dampens the kind of home field advantage that that could be shown out in Knoxville. So that's really good for the Longhorns. I'm also looking at, you know, four confirmed night games already, you know, three at home between Ohio State, UTSA, A&M, and then you have the one on the road with Mississippi State's there, A&M's on the road. Then you could be flexed in two more, right? Ole Miss at home could be flexed into a night game, which with the way that, you know, Sark and Pete Golden have gone back and forth in the offseason, and if Ole Miss and Texas are both one loss or fewer teams, could easily see that being a top 10 matchup at night. And then I would be very surprised if Texas at LSU is not a night game this year. I think LSU or Texas would have to do a lot of bad leading up to like be out of the playoff race for this not to be at night, especially I'm forgetting the exact games, but it's the best matchup, at least preseason that day. So five games at least, I think, are going to be played at night for Texas, which just, you know, that's the kind of market that this team is in. That's the kind of spot that the program is in, that they're going to be playing in front of the fans, in front of the under the lights, and in front of the nation a lot. And then one little stretch that I really wanted to point out that I pointed out on my Twitter is, you know, you get that bye in between Tennessee and Oklahoma, which is great. And that's that Red River bye is always really nice to have. You don't get a bye for the rest of the season, right? It's that one bye. And so I look at specifically when Ole Miss comes into town, that four game stretch from Ole Miss through LSU is going to be the season defining stretch for Texas, which is, you know, Ole Miss is going to be a good team this year. I don't know the extent of how good. At the very least, they have Trinidad Chambliss and Kawan Lacy and the defensive coordinator who made a good defense last year. So they're going to have probably a good defense, some really good playmakers on offense, especially if that game's at night on prime time. Like, you got to take care of business. And then, you know, Mississippi State at home at night should be a win for the Texas team. But you've now played four straight games in a row. You have to go on the road to Missouri, who's a good team. It's going to be an early window, but it's a good team. And then you also have to travel to LSU and Death Valley the very next week. Excuse me, voice crack. That's five, six games in a row right there where you are just playing football, football, football. Ends with two road games. Two of those four games are going to be against really high-level opponents. Missouri's no pushover. You know, then you do get a bit of a break with Arkansas before A&M. But that four-game stretch, I think, is where, you know, if Texas comes in with just one loss or fewer and comes out with the same amount of losses, they are going to be in such a good position for the playoff race and just overall the strength of the team and the confidence in the team.
No doubt. No doubt. Well said. Well, Evan, we appreciate the time as always. Great breakdown. We hit you with everything. Baseball, recruiting, football. You do tremendous work. I guess before we let you go, opportunity to plug what you guys have going on at Inside Texas.
Yeah. InsideTexas.com is where you can find my writing. I just dropped an article about kind of did a big old statistical dive on the baseball opponents on that side of the bracket, those three SEC teams. At Evan Veith on Twitter is where you can find me. That's mainly the two spots. So, yeah, check me out on at Evan Veith and then InsideTexas.com.
You're the man. Thanks as always, brother. Thank you,
Thank you, guys.
All right, there he goes. Evan Veith, Inside Texas, talking all things Longhorns. And, yeah, go subscribe over to Inside Texas if you haven't done so yet. I'm a subscriber. I'm a subscriber. I just had a little glitch there. Love the work that they do.
Yeah, I kind of like the fact that both of you guys are like, don't panic about recruiting right now. There's no reason to panic. They're getting the guys that they need to get, and they're eyeballing the ones that they want. And once they start to eyeball you, and they, you know, even though you got other schools in mind, once Texas starts to really get you in there and they get you on campus, it's just about over. You know, you end up being in the top two.
Excuse me, Bug. Yeah, it happens every year where, I mean, Steve Sarkisian actually has more players committed right now than he typically does in a cycle. Right. But, yeah, the Longhorns, I mean, they play catch-up. They play from behind, and, you know, people are panicking and freaking out, like, oh, the class is only ranked this, and everybody else is up here. And then at the end of the day, I mean, Sark keeps bringing in top 10 class after top 10 class. So, you know, I mean, Texas's class last year was only eighth. Some places it was 10th, which is a bit of a step back from where it had been.
Absolutely, you're right.
I think if Texas goes and wins a national championship this year, people will be like, sure, that's fine. Just make sure you hit the portal hard every year like you did. But, like, yeah, you don't maybe need to spend all that money on high schoolers every year. Save some to go in on the portalers, and that may be part of the plan for Steve Sarkisian and this coaching staff going forward.
Yeah, especially when it comes to big people on the defensive line. You'll find them in the portal. They'll be in the portal.
Those guys are expensive in the portal for sure.
Yes, they are.
But, yeah, if you can get difference makers there, then go get – I mean, last year Texas got five of them in the transfer portal. So they haven't been shy to address any additional need in the portal, no doubt. You hope to not have to pay for a quarterback, right? If you can recruit somebody out of high school, then that makes a big difference because so much money goes into portal quarterbacks. So yeah, having Arch Manning isn't making nothing, but having Arch Manning, like, not having to pay for him out of the portal is
big. Yeah, and grooming some of the young guys that you have that are going to be in the program a while before they get a chance. That's always a good thing. I mean, that's what you want as a coach. You don't want to be spending money for guys that you don't know well that pull the trigger for you unless they're just superstars, you know, and you don't have, and you've got just a couple backups that, you know, they were ranked high in high school, but as you've watched them grow, they've grown, but they haven't grown enough that they can get you into playoff time type of football, you know?
Well, the hope is, I mean, Arch Manning obviously is the guy this year. And when he departs for the NFL, either KJ Lacy or Dia Bell just takes over. So, you know, you want to see enough from those guys. I hope we don't see a lot from them during the regular season, right? Arch is the guy. Hopefully nothing happens to him, but you want the coaching staff to see enough from one or both of those guys to where they feel confident that, no, we don't need to spend $4 or $5 million out on a portal quarterback because we feel like one of these guys that we've developed in-house is ready for the big time.
Absolutely. So
that's the goal. We know you've got one of those guys right now. We know they've got one of those guys right now, but making sure that beyond 2026, you're set at the most important position on the field. That's very, very important.
Yes, all right. It is.
We'll take your thoughts. We're going to chop it up with Georgia insider Anthony Dasher at the top of the hour. We'll get a little College World Series preview from him and also talk a little Georgia football. Why not? But before we start barking like dogs and put leashes around our necks and be really
They're
weird.
Eating the dogs.
Yeah,
yes, we'll they be are. Eating
some dogs in a moment. Before we do that, how about another round of sponsor shout-outs?
If you're seeking that specialized patient-focused orthopedic care, elbows, knees, ankles, shoulders, backs, contact our experts at Texas Orthopedics. Their physicians offer comprehensive surgical and non-surgical orthopedic care for children and adults. Rehabilitation, spinal care, sports medicine, joint replacement. Their doctors are dedicated orthopedic surgeons, and their goal is to get you right back into good health and the great quality of life that you deserve. Texas Orthopedics is the largest independent orthopedic practice in Central Texas. For more information, please contact them at txortho.com.
Yes, indeed. Love Texas Orthopedics. Also a shout out to the Altstadt Brewery, the best brewery in the state of Texas. That's not just my opinion. No, the Altstadt Brewery was voted that earlier this year by people who get paid to drink beer and go to breweries and drink. And what a life that must be.
Eat and drink.
Man, I mean.
Yeah, man.
I kind of like getting to talk about sports, but getting paid to drink beer around the state, not the worst thing in the world. Well, hey, we're lucky to get Altstadt. Not the worst thing in the world that we get Altstadt here in the Lone Star State. It's my choice. It's the only beer that I drink. I'm not drinking anything else. If they don't have Altstadt beer, I'm going to liquor. I don't want any like garbage beer. I don't want any beer that tastes like water. I don't want any beer that tastes like urine. There's a lot of those out there. Altstadt is the best there is. Tons of different brews. Something for every beer drinker out there. They've got a great lager. That's my personal favorite. The Kolsch, the Pils, the Hefeweizen, the summer seasonal peach rattler. I'm telling y'all, something for every beer drinker out there. And Altstadt is easy to find too. Your favorite grocery stores, your favorite liquor stores, bars and restaurants all across the Lone Star State. Your good times are made better with a great beer by your side. My choice should be yours as well. It's Altstadt beer. No impurities, no regrets.
And our good friends at Relax the Back is a great place to find that zero gravity recliner, Tempur-Pedic pillows, mattresses, of course, office chairs, desk. They've got everything that you're looking for that's going to help protect your back, your neck, your shoulders, your hips, whatever you've got going on. Please, folks, head on over to Relax the Back, grab one of their accessories that's going to help you feel fantastic. They've got two great locations. One is in Bee Caves at the Hill Country Galleria across from Whole Foods, and in North Austin at the Gateway Shopping Center across from the Container Store. Live pain free like the buck at Relax the Back.
Yeah, I went to the Hill Country Galleria location yesterday.
Oh, did you get a little sleep in?
Chopped it up with our guy Jason and our guy Brian. Great people. And those chairs, they put me in one of those zero gravity chairs. I almost walked out with one. I was just going to say hi. They let me sit in one of those chairs. They turned on the zero gravity mode. I'm just like floating. I'm like, oh, this is nice. I need one of those. Nice. They're the best. They're great people. Super clean store. And yeah, their selection is unmatched. So don't wait for back pain. If you have back pain, go there. But like, you can prevent this stuff before it happens.
That's for sure.
With their beds, their chairs, and their massage tools and everything. Like you said, at Relax the Back.